Brian, I know you just made it to Tokyo, so how was the journey, man? How you feeling?
Well, I mean, Pablo, I just traveled for 27 hours and all of the restaurants were closed, and I haven't figured out Uber Eats yet. And so, I mean, I knew this would probably happen. I brought an emergency giant jar of peanut butter.
Brian Windhorst covers the NBA for ESPN and hosts the Hoop Collective podcast. We caught up with him at the end of his long, long journey to cover USA basketball at the Olympics.
So, like, you know, this is the glamour of, you know, my first Olympics. My dinner, quote unquote, was a granola bar, several spoonfuls of peanut butter, my Jif peanut butter, and one Little Debbie oatmeal cream cake, which I had probably haven't had one in 15 years. But when I was at the store, I thought that was the kind of comfort food I would need when I was hopeless for food in Tokyo.
Brian, I gotta say, like, you're gonna discover, I think at some point, the glory of the Japanese convenience store, which is a magical thing. But I just love that if you and I were, like, gonna compete on The Amazing Race together, like, you would be packing a giant jar of peanut butter. And that's kind of the centerpiece of your survival package here.
We are allowed to go to a 7-Eleven, which is 24 hours. I haven't ventured in there yet.
Yeah, oh, the Japanese 7-Eleven, dude. I you do a whole podcast about the sandwiches they sell at Japanese 7-Elevens, honestly.
I'm not very adventurous, so I might hope to buy some bread to pair with my peanut butter.
Team USA is in a sticky situation. You might recall men's basketball used to be a cakewalk for us Americans. Blowouts, photo ops, gold medals, real easy. But after this month's stunning losses to Nigeria and Australia and a roster consumed by chaos, having all-stars like Kevin Durant and Dame Lillard still might not be enough. Today, Brian Windhorst explains why this summer for USA basketball is looking especially difficult to swallow, and how all these players might drive their bosses back home. A little nuts. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, July 23rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. So, Brian Windhorst, you are in Tokyo, you are in Japan. I have imagined you as kind of like a Bill Murray, Lost in Translation type figure. But the spectacle you are here to cover is Team USA. It's the men's basketball team. And I got to say, Brian, I was not so interested until the last couple weeks when it looked like things were not going to go well for Team USA in these Olympics. And now I am all in on needing to know everything about what is going on here. So Team USA plays their first game Sunday morning, East Coast time, against France, a really good team. As they get ready for that, where is the team right now? When did they arrive in Japan?
They left Las Vegas on Monday, arrived in Japan on Japan's Tuesday, and they had 8 players at that time. So that's the bad news. The good news is that they should have all 12 ready and accounted for Sunday's game against France. But this situation is preposterous, what they are going to have to do, because Greg Popovich, the coach, has openly said he's probably not going to have any sort of practice with Devin Booker, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday, the 3 players coming over from the finals.
Yeah.
He has no idea what sort of condition they're going to be in. They're going to be better conditioned because they've been playing, but what their fatigue level is going to be after playing a finals and then traveling to Asia.
Brian, I just want to stop you here for a second because you use the word preposterous to describe the situation. I feel like Devin Booker would choose a harsher adjective to describe that flight he's going to have to take alongside Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, who just beat him in the NBA Finals. Tell me about what that arrangement is like, because that just seems like awkward is an understatement to me on that one.
We're waiting to find out how that all went down, because Devin Booker, fresh, not fresh off, but certainly in a great rhythm, you know, he was scoring 40 points, you know, multiple games in a row. And the idea of him coming to join Team USA was pretty appetizing for Team USA. You know, his quote was, "I'm taking the first thing smoking."
Next thing smoking, I'll be there. I'll be there.
An old phrase about taking the first flight out. And the three of them would, in theory, ride together for the 13-hour trip. And the real question that I'm going to have, and I just don't know the answer yet, Pablo, whether Devin had to wait for Milton and Holiday, because I believe that, you know, their intention to attend the parade.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, going to be your later today, my tomorrow. Yep. And whether or not Devin Booker just sat around Milwaukee and like waited, or whether he was like, you know what, maybe I'll take United and went back to Phoenix.
Brian, I just imagine Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday, both deeply and rightfully as hungover as anyone is on this planet, still smelling like very expensive champagne. And then you pan over to the left and there is Devin Booker in like one of those bucket seats on a private jet, just staring dead ahead.
It's one thing to go play with that guy on the same team where you're, you know, fighting for the same goal and you're with your new teammates, but sitting in a confined space for a half day, how do you not talk about the finals? And this is one of the things we all want to talk to these guys
like
about
16
on
hours.
Sunday.
16 hours.
Yeah. Like, let's just say you watch, you know, you sleep for a little bit and, you know, you binge a couple of episodes of your favorite Netflix show. At some
That's
point,
right.
You're going to want to talk to the people. Hey, what have you guys been up to? How's your summer?
But it seems, Brian, like, they're going to have to get through that flight because they're necessary for this team. They're not luxuries. They're actually really needed by Greg Popovich.
And they're needed on Sunday, Pablo. France beat the Americans in the World Cup in 2019. They have Rudy Gobert, obviously one of the best big men in the world. They have Evan Fournier, who absolutely eviscerated the Americans in 2019. They have Nando DiColo, who you may have mentioned had a cup of coffee in the NBA, but he is one of the best players in Europe now, and they're playing European-style basketball, and a generally veteran team. And Pop basically said, like, I am going to have to potentially throw them out there and see what they've got.
It is true that they won't be as ready to play in the sense of execution that we might want, but that's understandable.
This team doesn't have the luxury of being able to say, well, we'll sit you for the first couple of games. They're going to play them. They're going to just turn up, you know, right off the finals, which is a emotionally, physically, and mentally gutting experience, win or lose, and put USA across their chest and be expected to not only win, but play very well and dominate.
Yeah, and Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton already quite turned up off of that parade. Devin Booker, on the other hand, is going to have to revive himself, it sounds like he just died in a video game. But I want to set the scene here too, Brian, because that is not the only bit of chaos that Team USA dealt with in Vegas. And you were there out in Las Vegas. What was happening? Because COVID protocols and injuries were plaguing this team.
At one point, they were down to six players. They had non-official roster players who were with them, both NBA players and non-NBA players who are familiar with the international game. So they were able to continue practicing, but they were using players that were never going to play for them in the Olympics because, you know, Bradley Beal had to leave with COVID. Two players went into quarantine, Zach LaVine and Jeremy Grant, and Kevin Love had to leave claiming that he had a calf injury. And Jason Tatum missed a game with a sore knee. So they just had all kinds of challenges. I mean, it was already a pretty abbreviated, you know, rush this team together, which was compounded by the fact that the team was assembled to compete in 2020, and then it didn't happen. And so even the members of the team who've played together before, they haven't had any, like, international reps in a couple of years now.
Right.
They had six practices together in the United States. And those practices weren't even high quality, some of them, because they didn't have the bodies to have a full-on practice, no chemistry building. So it showed in the results. They lost their first two exhibition games. They had been 54-2 in exhibition games since the initial Dream Team when professionals were allowed to play. And they lost two in 3 days to Nigeria and Australia. that was very sobering. And so they are definitely the favorites, and they have a lot of star power, but this is not going to be easy.
Well, the good news is that they have identified a savior, and that savior is JaVale McGee.
Yes, I know that received a lot of eyebrow raising, to put it mildly. I can explain why he was picked. I'm not going to defend the selection.
So please explain this, because the last time I thought of JaVale McGee in international competition, it was when the Philippines, Brian, was trying to scam him onto their national team like several years ago, which tells you a lot, given that the U.S. is basically doing the same in 2021 now.
That's right. So going back to 2019 in the World Cup, Greg Popovich's first year as head coach, he went with traditional centers on the roster. He had Brook Lopez, Miles Turner, and Mason Plumlee. And he was worried about the classic, you know, big men on these European teams, and the Americans got hammered. The big men were able to not leave the lane. They couldn't stretch the floor. And so they completely junked that strategy and went to a much smaller, higher volume shooting team this year with Draymond Green and Bam Adebayo, two guys who are, we would never call classic centers. And what happened in those first couple of games is they were getting ripped on the inside. When Bradley Beal and Kevin Love left and they needed to pick a player from outside, they went for a player who can block shots, quite frankly. And there's a couple of criteria, some more important than others. One of the criteria is they wanted a guy who was in shape. You know, for example, one of the players they were interested in was Tobias Harris. Mm. But once Tobias did not get invited to Team USA, he took a 3-week vacation out of the country. A lot of people said, why not Trae Young? Trae Young had this amazing playoff run. He's this great shooter. Yeah. Why not Trae Young? And even Trae Young was saying, why not Trae Young, in fact. But if you looked at the balance of the team and you watched the first exhibition games, they really did need some sort of athletic shot blocker. And the tiebreaker may just have been that he has a good relationship and a close relationship with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. And I don't know what Durant would say publicly, but it looks to me like Durant is getting a lot of input on how this team is structured.
But Trae Young, I mean, to put a point on what you just said there, he posted that Isaiah Thomas Last Dance clip.
I met the criteria to be selected, but I wasn't.
Yes.
I met the criteria to be selected. Obviously, he was not. But now I'm realizing that Kevin Durant may be the Michael Jordan in this 2021 iteration of that metaphor.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was exactly the same. Like, I think Jordan actively wanted Isaiah off. I don't think Kevin had
between KD and Trae Young in that.
Yeah, I don't think Kevin had anything against Trae. I think it was more like, we need a big. Well, how about we call my boy JaVale? Greg Popovich basically, or maybe it was Jerry Colangelo, said he could have kissed Kevin Durant when he committed to this roster. Because even though there's a lot of talent here, they really needed, you know, that core guy to say, I'm coming. Just being able to go out with him to other players and saying, hey, KD is committed, he's in, was a huge thing in getting this team where it's at. And so with that kind of, you know, impact comes along some spoils. And I'm sure KD is taking advantage of it. And Pablo, he was so good in the 2016 Olympics. He shot 58% from three-point range.
And is like the perfect kind of player that you need for this style of play. And so after the break, Brian, I want to get into how the international game differs from the NBA such that it caters to a Kevin Durant even more so. And I want to ask you what to expect as the actual games get underway.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Brian, for those who didn't watch the exhibitions in Vegas, or maybe just hibernated through international basketball since, like, 92 and the Dream Team changed everything, remind us how this particular version of basketball differs from what we've been seeing in the NBA.
All right. Well, there's two enormous differences. And since 2006, the Americans have lost six games, and I've been at five of them.
So we're blaming you, Brian. We're blaming Brian Winhurst for all of this.
In all five of the losses that I've witnessed, they, in my view, would have won had they been 48-minute games. But they are 40-minute games, four 10-minute quarters. And I'm tempted to disregard that. But, oh, my gosh, does it make such a huge difference? Because the longer anything is, the talent gap starts to show. If you play for, you know, 100 minutes, you're going to have a hard time beating Team USA. If you play for 10 minutes, you might have a chance to catch them sleeping a little bit, toss in some shots. So the 40-minute game changes the value of each possession because it's shorter and has punished the Americans at times. The other thing is there is no defensive 3-second call. And that means that a player like Rudy Gobert or any kind of other basket defender can stand in the lane without retribution, which is one of the reasons why you see a lot more zone in international games than in regular games, NBA games.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who it drove absolutely crazy was Giannis. In 2019 in the World Cup, they've rebranded it the World Cup now, I watched Greece play a couple of games. The players would just stand there and Giannis would go barreling in and he'd get charges. I think he fouled out maybe like three out of their four games or three out of their five games. The other times he was completely frustrated. I remember walking away saying, I don't know if Giannis is ever going to play for Greece again.
It's the exact opposite of what he had in the finals, right? In the finals in the NBA, you clear the lane by spreading the floor with shooters.
That's
the
right.
Five needs to get out of there. And in international basketball, there's always a large human being just waiting to topple over or draw a charge.
Yeah, and Rudy Gobert, who's obviously a great defender under NBA rules, when you let him stand at the basket and defend the front of the basket, you're going to have a hard time getting anything close. There's a couple other things that you'll see, and it looks very strange. You know, I'm not surprised if it's hard to believe, but it's true. You're allowed to goaltend by taking the ball off the rim. You're not allowed to goaltend by swatting a shot on it's on the way down. But if a ball is bouncing on the rim, even if it's in the cylinder, you can pull it off. And against Nigeria, in a key play, the Americans missed a free throw and the opposition came and grabbed it off the rim. And the crowd was furious. They were screaming and pointing and saying, well, it's a goaltend. And no, it's not.
How has Team USA changed over time, Brian? Because I know you start with 92, and that's when basketball got exported to the world via Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley and everyone on that world famous historical team. But since then, just to put a fine point on this, it does feel like pretty objectively the gap has been closing.
Yes, absolutely. For one thing, the U.S. has lost the momentum that it had of keeping teammates together summer over summer. You know, the Dream Team's the most famous team, but probably the greatest accomplishment was in 2008 with the Redeem Team won the gold medal. After they had lost the 2004 gold medal, got the bronze in Athens, that Redeem Team had played largely in 2006, 2007, and then 2008 together. Three consecutive summers they played together, and that team had great chemistry when it mattered. Because of what's happened now, first off, they didn't want the Basketball World Cup on the same schedule as the Soccer World Cup. So they pushed it back a year. And next thing you know, you end up with World Cup in 2019, Olympics in 2020, and the players didn't want to give up multiple summers. Then COVID happened. And so Team USA has only played in one major event since 2016, one event in 5 years, where these other teams, if they're not playing in the Olympics or the World Cup, they're playing in their continental championships, the Asian Cup, the Euro Cup, the African Cup. And that year over year over year playing shows up in the Olympics.
And so when you survey the landscape, Brian, like it's safe to say like the Angolans aren't here. They're not asking for photos with our players. That era is long dead and gone. So who's the biggest competition for Team USA in Tokyo?
Well, I want to point out this was one of the hardest Olympics to ever get into. They limited the field to 12 teams. And the Canadians, who had a bunch of NBA players, lost their qualifying tournament on their home soil. The Serbians, silver medalists in 2016, although Nikola Jokic didn't play, the number two ranked team in the world, lost its qualifier on its home soil. So the teams that have made it to Tokyo have won their way in. In addition to that, all of these teams have NBA players on them, multiple NBA players. You know, you look at Nigeria, who beat the Americans in their first exhibition game, they had seven active NBA players on their roster. And none of them are superstars in the NBA, but they all play. And that was not the case, you know, 8 years ago, 12 years ago.
And so now, Brian, aside from Team USA, who are the favorites to end up on the medal stand at the end of this thing?
The Australians have never medaled in the Olympics or the World Cup. They have four fourth-place finishes. And this is arguably the best team they've ever had. Their players are all veterans. They've been battle-tested. You've got a couple of NBA players in there. Joe Ingles, Matthew Dellavedova, Matisse Thybulle, Patty Mills, who you won't even recognize when he plays for Australia. He looks like Steve Nash.
Oh, I saw a photo of him, and it is jarring. That is not the Patty Mills that I thought I knew winning titles with the Spurs.
So the Australians are very formidable, and they have beaten the Americans twice in the last 3 years. And then you look at France, who has some NBA talent and has some experience. They finished with a bronze medal in the World Cup in 2019, the bulk of that team is back. And, you know, I think you have to include Slovenia, even though they've never been here before. The thought of Luka playing a 40-minute game and what he can do to make his teammates better and how he can transcend things. Like, I would be watching them very closely if I was the national team, and I'm sure that they will be.
Yeah, Brian, it's worth pointing this out, being very clear about this. The NBA is stocked full of international talent, more international talent these days than it's ever had before. But now there's this showcase for the players who may not, you know, dominate every starting lineup in the league, but clearly fill out the depth charts. And that feels like it's going to be pretty eye-opening for American fans, because there is still this expectation that you put the jersey on with USA on the front and you go out there and you just dominate, like it's supposed to be automatic. But recent history shows that that is not the case. The U.S. finished seventh at the 2019 World Cup of basketball. So the gap closing globally, is that good for basketball at large?
Absolutely. And I'm just going to be honest, the rules in FIBA are set up to challenge Team USA. They want to make the game different so that the Americans have bigger challenge. And so the thing that nobody says out loud is how great it would be for international basketball for the U.S. to continue to struggle. And it would increase the value of the gold medal so much. But it is something strange that we see it all the time, and it's hard to quantify and it's hard to explain sometimes. But when those players go play for their national team and they become the man on that roster, they just do things that we don't expect. For example, the U.S. is going to play the Czech Republic as their third group game. Tomáš Satoranský is the point guard for the Czech Republic. He is the backup for the Chicago Bulls and is, you know, a nice player and also a ran player. You know, he can have a good night or whatever, but, you know, not somebody that you're going to come to the arena saying, I want to watch Tomáš Satoranský. Well, when Satoranský plays for the Czechs, he is awesome. And it's hard to say, well, you know, where is this Tomáš Satoranský in the NBA? It happens.
Yes, where is Satoranský's sanity? Why are we getting that?
In fact, Greg Popovich even studied it. You know, Patty Mills was so good for the Australian team. He's been good for the Spurs, but he's not the same player. He's like, how do we pull this out of Patty?
That's Patty. You know, well, I'm so happy he's on my team back in the NBA. But playing him here, he's a real pain in the ass. He is. He moves, he cuts, he's smart, he's tough. He's a pain in the ass.
So it is, you know, there is just something that happens that doesn't always happen for the Americans. The Americans do this, the stars do this, to have the experience. In some cases it's marketing, but to have the experience, they don't come to play for it, to rise to another level. They do want to play well, but the experience of it is different.
What does this team need to do, Brian, that they have not done so far in these exhibition games? How does this go well for Team USA?
Well, this is the best shooting team they've probably ever had. They were awesome shooting the three in 2016, and this team in 2021 is already ahead of that 2016 team's pace on three-point shooting. That is absolutely their strength, and they need that strength, Pablo, because, as I mentioned earlier, they're small, and teams attack them inside, and they get out-rebounded by an average of 6.5 a game in the exhibition schedule. And they got outscored in the paint heavily at times. The Australians, for example, killed them in the paint. You know, and like, look, Dame Lillard is not a great defensive player. Teams are attacking him. And so you're making the calculus that Dame being out there, his offense will make up for any defensive issues. But that is their blessing and a curse. Their blessing is they've got a lot of three-point shooters. Their curse is that leads to an undersized and sometimes questionable defensive roster.
Okay, Brian, after the break, I want to get to the other subplot that is always running underneath Team USA and how that might help reshape the NBA.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely. Drink wisely.
So it's worth pointing out here, Brian, the Olympics also have extraordinarily real NBA implications because Team USA is notoriously, and you are the world expert on this, it's notoriously where the NBA super team is birthed. So for those not familiar with how it all works behind the scenes, give us the history on this.
Well, these guys spend so much time together on planes, on buses, and, you know, having team meals. And it might even be even more this year because friends and family are not allowed to come and they're restricted to their hotel. So what are you going to do? You're going to hang out with your teammates. And they start talking about their situations and, hey, could you come play with me or could we both go somewhere? It's just, you know, it's starting with the LeBron and Wade Bosch triumvirate that first played together on the national team. It's become more and more. So this year, the ones everyone is looking at are Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal, because there's some teams out there have representatives on the team. You know, for example, I think the Golden State Warriors would have interest in trading for both of those guys if they became available. And the Warriors coaching staff was part of the coaching staff of the Olympics, and there's a connection there already. This year, there's not a lot of free agents, but with Lillard and Beal and their situations, it's what we're watching. And then there's even some people who are jumping to conclusions about, you know, why did Kevin Love make the team, which was a questionable pick. Some people think it's to grease the skids to get him to play with Durant and get comfortable and have him think about Brooklyn if he gets a buyout with the Cavs. There's all kinds of conspiracy theories going on, and we're just going to have to see who we see palling around with and spending time together, because that often does become a recruiting situation.
I love this. I love all of this. I love that presumably teams back in the States are terrified by this. I love that this somehow does not count as tampering, right? Like, this is all, like, okay by the rules?
Yeah, I mean, player-to-player tampering is never enforced anyway. But, yeah, they can't really legislate if you were sitting back with a beer after a victory and you in the team in the hotel lobby because you can't leave. And hey, what's your contract status? Well, I'm up in 10 days. Oh, really? I'm up now. It's interesting. We should talk. We should have our agents talk. I mean, sometimes it's not that spontaneous, but I do believe that, you know, Team USA has been a foundational force for super teams. There is no question about that.
Yeah, I remember seeing photos, Brian, of a young Anthony Davis palling around with LeBron James, obviously planting the seeds for their title run. I remember hearing about Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant becoming boys while on Team USA. Obviously, that birthed the Nets, where James Harden ended up joining them later. But I do want to ask about Dame Lillard in specific, because he's here on Team USA, as you said, and I don't even know how to describe the current, like, detente that he has with his employers in Portland, because the whole will he, won't he, has he already, like, soap opera question of demanding a trade, demanding out. How would you explain where we are today with Dame's dissatisfaction and his desire to finally maybe get out of there?
While playing on this one of the highest profile situations he was in his career on Team USA.
Yes.
Yeah, he's had to address it twice already. And so it is a classic game of chicken and using of leverage. You know, Damian Lillard just watched the NBA Finals where the Milwaukee Bucks won a championship because they went all in and went out and traded for Jrue Holiday, went out and traded for that difference-making star player, and then later on PJ Tucker. He's looking at the Suns, who went out and got Chris Paul to add to their roster. And he's looking at his team and saying, no offense to my teammates, but he's actually offended them, quite frankly, the way he said, but he's like, I'm not getting any younger. He turned 31 just a week or so ago. I think something should be done. And he really wants the Blazers to do that. He wants them to make that type of trade where you trade, you know, your entire future stock of draft picks to get a player that will get him closer to a title. And watching the Bucks do it so quick makes him want to do that, especially with his stature. But Portland's situation is, we can't go hog wild here if we don't know you're in, because he's got a 4-year contract. But, you know, the way he's saber rattling, you know,
yeah.
Do they go out and trade? You know, it's one of these things where they say, Dame, if you are in with us, let's work together and find something in the draft or go take a big swing to try to trade for a guy and pair with it. But don't wait around without supporting us and sort of throwing us under the bus saying you're not going to know what's going to happen. And then after we do those things, maybe you say that's not good enough and then you want to leave and now we're behind the eight ball. It's a very modern problem that is as a result of players' contracts basically not being that valuable in terms of tying them to teams and swinging in the players' favor. And that Portland is playing the game and doing the dance right now. And I don't know how it's going to play itself out. And the crazy thing is Dame is going to be playing for Team USA in Japan during free agency and the draft. So he's going to be like out there playing as the Blazers are scrapping and fighting and trying to improve the roster and in position where he may pass judgment on it in front of everybody.
Brian, the dance that we're going to be watching here, this is like, you know, you're fighting with your girlfriend and amid the biggest fight of your relationship, she goes to study abroad. But not only that, you get a camera to watch what they're up to over in Japan. And that is a subplot that, honestly, I'm so glad I'm not a Blazers fan, and I'm so glad we also get to watch that.
Yeah, and he gets to try things out with potential new teammates, and it's a very unusual just schedule timing, as we talked about earlier. It's just the whole thing is very unusual and very unprecedented, and just the idea that the finals were going on as Team USA was having training camp. It was finals one day, Dame Lillard trade rumors the next. We're going to have Team USA going on playing these high stakes games, not just on the court, but in the transaction space while so much of the league is retrofitting. And you know, there's going to be a franchise altering or face of the league altering change. It happens every summer, and that's going to happen. One of these guys could be involved in a trade, or one of these guys' teams could end up making a major upgrade or downgrade while they're in the middle of doing this. It's never been done before. It's very hard to know how it's going to affect them.
Brian Windhorst, I just want you to know you will always have a spot on the ESPN Daily Super Team.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Udgelow. I'll talk to you Monday.